Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now celebrating 17 years of broadcasting success, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience here in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM and WYADonline.com. We're glad that you all could be with us. Also, just tuning in to our online affiliates around the world, we're glad you all could be with us, too. You know, when I hear about different stories that sometimes we may miss the importance of, I definitely know it's something that we can be able to share with our audience that may be of interest to them as well. I think that is true when it comes to the importance of the horseshoe crab. Now, for those who may not realize how important it might be, our next guest has written a fascinating book to really show not only the importance of it, but also the danger that's taking place right now when it comes to it. We're excited to welcome William Sargent to our program. William's new book is called Crab Wars, A Tale of Horseshoe Crabs, Ecology, and Human Health. We're going to talk to William not only about the writing and research of this book, but also what it's been like for him to really turn attention to the impact of what we're doing in the world and how it's affecting not just us, but also, of course, those things that are so vital to us. If you just know hearing about the book, I'll remind you he can get your own copy of it. But, William, thank you so much for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to do it. I should mention this is the second edition of the book that's out now, William. So let's go back a little bit. Could you have imagined when the book was first released that not only would it have the importance that it has had, but also would be as timely as it is today?
Well, I certainly I didn't know that we were going to have COVID, and of course that has made a major change with horseshoe crabs. But I did know when I wrote the first edition that this was very important. It's basically we use horseshoe crab blood to test for gram-negative bacteria. And anything that's going to come in contact with the human blood system has to be checked to make sure that it's free of bacteria. And the way they do this is with the brilliant blue blood of the horseshoe crab. And so it's about the most commonly used medical procedure in existence, and it is all made possible by a single species of wild animal. And that animal is declining up and down the East Coast.
Yeah. You say in the book, as you're beginning in the introduction, William, I want to share two things that you reference here. You said some of the information in this book comes from my own lifelong interest in horseshoe crabs. My involvement with them stems from childhood fascination and has run the gamut from studying the crabs' natural history to writing about their physiology to collecting them for Lightset. But you also go on to say this is a little-known story that affects people, endangered species, and human health worldwide. It shows some of the unforeseen consequences of biotechnology's powerful new abilities to affect non-target species and alter the finely tuned balance of natural ecological systems. I want to talk about that because I think that is the thing that really struck me as I was reading the book, that a lot of things are not that it was done with any malicious intent, right? But sometimes we do not realize, as I mentioned in my introduction, the impact of our actions. What has that part of the book been like for you to share, William, how by doing something, how human beings have been able to impact other species in a way that if they're not careful, it won't be able to be undone?
Well, yes, this is a very good example of that because, as I mentioned, we use the horseshoe crab for the lysate that's produced from their blood. So theoretically, you should be able to go out, collect the crabs, bring them into the laboratory, bleed them, and return them to the wild with no mortality. Under industrial conditions, quite often the trucks won't show up and the crabs will be left out in the sun and you'll get very high mortality, sometimes up to 50%. So this has had, you know, a lot of unforeseen circumstances, both consequences, both for the horseshoe crab, But there's also about a dozen endangered shorebirds that are dependent on horseshoe crab eggs for their existence. There's one called the red knot, and red knot migrate from the tip of South America in Tierra del Fuego all the way up to the Arctic Circle. And they time their migration so that they're in Delaware Bay during the new moon and the full moon high tide when the horseshoe crabs are laying their eggs. And then those birds will eat 40 tons of horseshoe crab eggs, and that will give them the energy they need to make the next leg of the of their migration to the Arctic Circle, and they'll have the fuel to start laying their eggs. Because we've been using them for lysate, but also for bait, if you keep the crabs alive and use them for what we call lysate, this is the process that you spin out the cells of the horseshoe crab, and they lyse themselves open. So if you keep them alive and use them for the lysate industry, each crab is worth about $1,500. If you chop them up and use them for bait, they're worth about 30 cents a pound. But that's what was being done, particularly in the mid-Atlantic states. And that had a severe impact on the number of horseshoe crabs. And then they were seeing that in the number of birds. You would like to think that the conservation of horseshoe crabs came about because of the horseshoe crabs and because they're so important to humans. It actually came about because of birders. And birders saw the decline in some of these endangered species and saw that they weren't able to lay their eggs when they got up to the breeding grounds because they were so emaciated. So they were really the people who pushed to conserve the horseshoe crabs.
Wow. And I think, and even in hearing you talk about it, William, I think we kind of are better able to understand, and I think even as you outline in the book, you know, how, you know, there is this, I mean, there are those, of course, who are trying to not only be able to do their part to help make sure that they do not become extinct. You share one of the examples in the book of those who, you know, are doing important work. You mentioned Brian and Linda in the book. And again, I think a lot of this, William, part of it is our own ignorance. I know for myself, I did not know a lot about the horseshoe crabs before reading this book. Is that one of the things that you're finding, though, that people, for one, don't know, but also they don't understand, because they don't know, they don't realize the importance of creatures like them?
Yes, and I think more people are starting to know about horseshoe crabs, particularly in the areas. There are three states where the horseshoe crabs are harvested for the lysate industry, and that's Massachusetts, South Carolina, and Maryland. I think in those states, people know about the crabs and know about the situation, but it's less well known in other areas.
Yeah. So as you are now are able to talk about the book, share the book, even before the second edition came out, are you finding that attitudes are shifting, or at least that people are understanding more about the impact that they're having on species like the horseshoe crab?
Yes, and of course the big change is, first of all, with COVID, the demand for horseshoe crab blood shot up because all of the antibody tests and all the vaccines and all the syringes that were used to give people shots all had to be checked to make sure that they were free of bacteria. And the way they did this is with the horseshoe crab blood test. And so that increased the demand. And what we're finding now is that there are fewer and fewer immature crabs, because what's happening is that the collectors are starting to collect them in the shallower waters where they're laying their eggs. So what that does is that removes the females from the breeding population. If you have a particular bay where the crabs are being collected, it might look like everything's fine. You'll see a lot of adult crabs, but what you don't see are the tiny crabs, and most people don't even recognize that they're there. You can go down on the shore, and you know, in a normal year, you should be able to walk around, you know, along, you know, say 100 feet, and count the number of horseshoe crabs, and you'd find between 200 and 300. Now we're only seeing two, and these are the little tiny crabs. They're about the size of your thumbnail.
Wow. Well, so of course you mentioned what has made the impact on us now over the past now going on 2 years, William, and that is COVID. We're going to talk about how you address that in the book, especially when it comes to chapters 23 and 24. I want to say for those who are just tuning in, though, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome William Sargent to our program today. William is celebrating the second edition of his book, Crab Wars, A Tale of Horseshoe Crabs, Ecology, and Human Health. We're about to now focus on the final part of that subtitle, Human Health Aspect. We all know where it seemed like the world was when COVID, you know, was apparent here in the United States, William. And as you kind of outline in chapter 23 of the book, there were people who were saying, of course, not only were we not prepared, but how long it would take for us to be able to get prepared. Talk to us about how, again, the horseshoe crabs, its importance was realized when COVID began.
I think everybody in the field knew that the vaccines were going to be developed, and that all the vaccines would have to be tested to make sure that they were free of bacteria. The horseshoe crab test really came into existence in 1976 when we had what was called the swine flu epidemic, but the epidemic never happened. A couple of recruits in Fort Dix, New Jersey, came down with a flu, and they thought that they were going to have a massive epidemic. And President Ford decided that he would inoculate every man, woman, and child against swine flu. And what happened is that it was a very, very public thing. You had celebrities on television getting their shots. And it was a very big deal. And then nothing happened. Nobody got sick from the swine flu. But what did happen is that hundreds of people started getting neurological problems. And that was because the vaccine had been contaminated with bacteria. And the former way that they used a test to make sure the vaccine was free of bacteria is that all the pharmaceutical companies would have huge colonies of live rabbits. So they might have 600 or 700 live rabbits. And when they were testing a vaccine, they'd test a whole vat of vaccine and they'd inject it into a live rabbit. And if the rabbit kicked over and died, then you knew that you had the bacteria. And so when this crisis arose, the Food and Drug Administration started comparing the rabbit test with the horseshoe crab test, and they found that horseshoe crab test was more sensitive, easier to use, and was cheaper. So they approved that for the standard test for bacteria, and that's what we're living with today.
Yeah, you are so reflective, William, in this book, and as I read even from the introduction. And this is something that has been with you since childhood, but you also find yourself even as you're wrapping up Crab Wars. You talk about, you know, when you were first writing this book, the why. You know, why were you doing this when, you know, the world was, you know, talking about other things, reflecting on other things. But you come to the realization, something I think all of us at some point do, is how we all have heard that saying, we're all in this together. Of course, your book reminds us we're not just talking about humans here. We're talking about that all of these species kind of relying on each other. How poignant has that been for you, William, to not only to reflect on that lesson for yourself, but now to remind us as readers of that too, that we all, you know, not just humans, but all species kind of in this thing, kind of in this world together?
Well, I've always been fascinated with horseshoe crabs, and that really came as a kid growing up on Cape Cod. I used to go out at night. I would row my boat out to the back shore of Nauset Beach, and I'd do this in the under the full moon high tides, and the horseshoe crabs would be crawling up on the beach to lay their eggs. And it gave you an incredible sense of creation because this has been going on for 450 million years. So this has been going on way before there were birds, fish, mammals, dinosaurs, all the animals that we're familiar with today and even some that we aren't familiar with today. Horseshoe crabs have been doing this for that 450 million years. So you get this, you know, incredible sense of creation and the sense, you know, that they were all part of this, the universe. They were all part of the universe. You know, the only thing on land at that time were little mosses and ferns and a few insects like dragonflies with about a 3-foot-long wingspan.
Well, it really helps to bring things into perspective. So I'm curious, then, William, with that being said, what is your hope as people pick up Crab Wars now and, you know, they're able to learn or to better understand their importance? When people finish the book, what is your hope they do with that information?
Well, I think I'm just glad that people will find out more about the crabs and realize how important they are to human health. Everybody listening to this program's lives have been protected by horseshoe crab blood. So we are all in this together. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, here we're being affected by this epidemic by, you know, a tiny little virus that's sort of halfway between being dead and being alive. It's unlike almost any other creature. And we're being protected by a 450 million year old creature that is protecting us, which is a fairly recent mammal. So it gives you an incredible feeling for how, you know, we're all connected. We've all been a part of evolution from those little tiny bits of our RNA viruses all the way up through ourselves. And this is the only way that the horseshoe crab blood test would work is because we are all related.
Wow. It is powerful, and it's something for us to really think about. And I'm so glad we have you here, William, to be able to give us your insights, your knowledge, and also a bit of your own story as you're able to share in the book as well, because I think it definitely helps us with perspective. Again, everyone, William Sargent has been our guest. Crab Wars is the book, A Tale of Horseshoe Crabs, Ecology, and Human Health. It's available through our friends at Amazon.com. You all can be able to get it there. Of course, you can also have it ordered at your favorite bookstore. If they don't have it, I know they'd be glad to get it for you. William, how can our audience stay connected with you?
They can stay connected through WilliamSargent.net, my website.
WilliamSargent.net. Okay, William, well, congratulations to you again. Really appreciate you stopping by and looking forward to speaking with you again, William.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
Hey, more than welcome. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Again, make sure you guys head over to Amazon.com or your favorite retailer and get your copy of Crab Wars. This is an important conversation, and the thing that I thought about when I was prepping for this segment initially is how, again, it reminds us how that we are not in this world by ourselves, and also, of course, the impact that other species can have on us. So it's a great reminder for us all. And that's going to do it for us for this episode of Conversations Live. If you all did come in late and you missed part of our conversation, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay. So make sure you guys do take advantage of that. Also, make sure you guys are following us online. You can find us on Facebook as well as on Twitter at Cyrus Webb. So make sure you all take advantage of following us there. We'd love to be able to follow you back. Also, keep in mind that we are on Instagram as well. There you can find us at Cyrus Webb Presents. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today, and let's go make today amazing. Take care.